Welcome to Rails with Jason. I'm Jason Sweat. A quick word before today's episode. If you're a Rails developer, there's a good chance you're writing tests. If you want to get better at writing tests, or if you're not currently writing tests and you want to learn how, go to codewithjason.com where you can find my free Ruby testing micro course. Now on to the episode. Welcome to Rails with Jason. I'm Jason Sweat, and I'm here today again with my friend Trey Robrock, and we're going to talk today about Vim. But before that, Trey, for the listeners who haven't heard our previous episode, which they totally should go listen to, it's about debugging tips. But if anybody hasn't heard that, can you share for the listeners who you are?
Sure. Yeah. Thanks for having me again. I am a software engineer, have been for about 10 years, have joined startups, have started my own startup, which is where you and I met. Recently just left that to kind of focus on some of my own things. I'm also a YouTuber, a podcaster, and everything else I possibly could be.
Yeah, you and me have in common, everything you could do, we do.
Yeah, exactly.
Podcast, videos, blog posts, all the stuff.
Yeah.
So Vim, I'm a Vim user and you're a Vim user, and a lot of people listening are probably Vim users, or if they're not, might like to get acquainted with Vim. First off, how long have you been using Vim?
Oh man. It's probably been 8 or 9 years. First took my job in Mountain View for Outright, I was using TextMate 2, if you remember that. And then someone that I was working with had just recently got onto Vim. It was ranting and raving about how efficient he was, and I'm all about efficiency. So we paired together for a couple of weeks and I got the basics, and I've just been hooked ever since.
Nice. Let's see. I started using Vim. I got introduced to it by a former boss of mine, I think around 2006 or so. So as of this recording, that would be 13 years ago. And I always say as a joke, however long I've been using Vim, 13 years, I'll say, oh, I've been using it for 13 years, which means I'm just starting to get comfortable with it. Because it's obviously a really big learning curve, but so is kind of anything worth knowing. It's a skill. Using Vim is definitely a skill. It takes a long time to get skilled with it, but once you do, it's great.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think like a lot of things, so this is a little bit random, but I've been getting into cardistry, which is doing cool stuff with cards. Okay. I literally always have a deck of cards in my hand now. There's so many different things that you can learn that sometimes it can be overwhelming, and then you don't get very good at any one thing. I feel like Vim is very, very similar. The basics are actually relatively quick and easy to get going, and I've taught that to people in one day, and then they can edit. You know, it's the equivalent of clicking and typing, except in the Vim world where you use a lot more of the keyboard.
Yeah.
So I think that's part of the struggle and part of the concept of the learning curve with Vim is there's just so much.
Hang on a second. I need to go back to something you said a minute. Cardistry. What is it? Is this magic tricks, or what are you talking about?
It was born out of magic. So when people were doing magic, they would come up with cool ways to reveal cards.
You can't see, dear listener, but Trey is waving a card in front of me right now.
Yes. And since then, it's turned into sort of an art form. Look up best cardist alive on Instagram and your mind will just be blown.
Is it Chris Angel?
No. So it's not magic at all. It's just cool stuff with cards. So you can do like fans and you probably could hear that. I just fidget with them all day. That's cardistry.
Got it. Okay, well, I couldn't leave that loop open for the whole rest of the episode, so I needed to get that out of the way. Yeah, so maybe what makes sense to talk about first. So maybe we'll talk about like some super beginner stuff and also some advanced stuff. But like probably the most important thing to understand first is the modes, the insert mode and command mode, I believe they're called. So like command mode is where you're basically moving around. You're not actually changing. Well, no, that's not true. You're moving around. You're not like typing new things in necessarily. And then insert mode is when that's when you're actually writing stuff. Do you think that's like an accurate way to say that?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I have a couple of tips on things that helped me to like manage those modes.
Yeah, let's hear it.
So the best way I think to use Vim is to pretty much always be in command mode, other than when you actually need to type text. For me, that was always tough because it's a lot less friction to just move the cursor around all the time in insert mode, and then you can type. You don't have to worry about typing I or Q or any of that stuff. So I found myself in there a lot, which made me a lot less efficient with it. So what I actually ended up doing is I disabled the arrow keys in insert mode. No, one of those. I disabled the arrow keys, I think it was, in insert mode, so I couldn't easily move around. So to move around easily, I had to jump out of insert mode.
Got it. Yeah. I see people using Vim sometimes and using whether it's an insert mode or command mode, I see people using the arrow keys, and I'm like, you're like leaving so much on the table by using the arrow keys. What you should be using, so if you're listening to this right now and you're somebody who uses the arrow keys, use the, let's see, J, K.
HJNL.
Yeah, I had to put my hands on the keyboard to know what it is, because I don't know any of this stuff
Yeah.
like by the
It's all
actual
muscle
keys,
memory.
right? Yeah, okay, so don't use the arrow keys and use mostly command mode. Okay. What else? Where should we go next?
Yeah, what I found with Vim, so it's one of those things that if you really want to get good at it, you have to force yourself into new habits. And the best way to force yourself into new habits is to make your bad habits less comfortable. So that's what I ended up doing with Vim, like disabling the arrow keys in insert mode. Well, it made insert mode horrible to be in, so I ended up being in command mode. So anytime you find yourself doing something that you don't like doing, I recommend setting those sorts of things.
Yeah, make it uncomfortable or make it impossible, like in your case where
Yeah.
you disabled the arrow keys. And by the way, mini tip, I for years when I wanted to leave insert mode and go into command mode, I would use escape, and then I discovered control C does the same thing, but it's a little bit more comfortable to do that instead of go all the way up to escape.
Interesting. Yeah, I still use escape. Yeah, I don't know. Although Control C has become a lot more appetizing with the Touch Bar MacBook Pros. I don't know if you've typed on one of those yet, but the escape, it's not an actual button anymore. So it's just like a screen. So there's no tactile feedback. So that's interesting.
I haven't typed on a computer that has the touch bar, and one of my life goals is to never do that. I'm hoping
I don't
to.
understand why they didn't just end the touch bar early, like they did on the other side for the fingerprint scanner. Just end it early and leave the button there.
Or just not have it at all.
Yeah.
Nobody asked for it. Nobody likes
No.
it.
It's probably one of the worst things they've ever created too.
It
I've never
really
seen
is.
it. It's never been useful. And when I first got it actually froze on me a lot
Oh
of the time.
no.
So then you can't change the volume. Anyways, we were completely tangential.
But it's important to talk about how terrible of a feature that is. I will never get tired of talking about how much it sucks. But yeah, my goal is to just hopefully they have the maturity or whatever to admit they made a mistake, and the next version will not have the touch bar, and I can just upgrade directly to that version. We will see whether that is the case. Okay, so back to Vim. Insert mode, command mode. What are some of the things, Trey, that like you maybe wish you had known way earlier in your usage of Vim that took you a long time to learn?
Relative number.
Oh, that was, I don't even use that.
It was another one of those things that if I wanted to get really good at Vim, I needed to get more efficient at navigating my way through a file. And jumping by number of lines is probably one of the fastest ways to get around a file in Vim. Okay. You know, I used to just like scroll and you hold down the J key and it scrolls. Well, if you're doing Ruby, the Vim parser for Ruby is really horribly performant. So you get a lot of choppiness. I don't know if you've ever noticed that with Vim.
No.
Yeah, it's the one language that has horrible performance. I've done all kinds of tweaks to make it better, but it's really just not good.
Interesting.
But so I turned on relative number, which helped a ton. Basically, what relative number is, for anyone that doesn't know what that is on your cursor, it will show your current line number in the file. But up from there, it starts from one and counts up. And down from there, it starts at one and counts down. So anytime, and this helps a lot when you're like remote pairing and stuff too. Andrew, you know, old coworker of ours, and I, whenever we pair, like we use this all the time where you can say like, oh, that method's six lines up. And then you just hit 6K. And then you're on that line.
Okay. I'm actually trying to set. I just set it as we're speaking.
Yeah. I see it. Colon set RNU, I think, will set it.
Yeah. So on your current number, if you move your cursor up and down, it'll show you the actual absolute number for that line. But then it'll show you the lines above and below relative. So you can do what? Just like 8K? Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
So you can jump around the file a lot faster that way. And that one took a long time before I really started using it.
Man.
But now it's one of those that I can't really use Vim without it.
Yeah. Maybe I'll start using that. I'm not sure that I would like it better, but maybe I would.
It's like all things with Vim, it takes a lot of getting used to.
Yeah. Okay, so you're talking about scrolling. I never used like J to scroll down a bunch or anything like that. My scrolling, and I'll have to again actually do it for the muscle memory. I use Control E, which will scroll down one line at a time, and Control Y, which scrolls up one line at a time. And then I'll use Control U, which scrolls up, I think, like half a page at a time.
Yep. Yeah, I'll use U and D, which do the up and down half page. I didn't know about the other two.
Yeah. Yeah, those are pretty useful because U and D, I need to open like a bigger, longer file. One second here. U and D, I think, will move your cursor, but E and Y will leave your cursor where it is.
And that might be why you've never noticed the performance.
I see. Okay, so just live while we're doing it, I'm going to scroll down. No, I'm scrolling down using J, and it's completely fine for me. So I don't know why we've had these different experiences.
Do you have your current cursor line highlighted?
No.
Set cursor line will highlight your current line.
Okay, set cursor
line. I know that one makes it really bad.
No, I'm not having a problem.
Maybe you just have a magical Vim config. I don't know.
We'll have to look at this later or something.
Yeah. It has gotten a lot better over the years. And I actually don't use Vim anymore. I switched to NeoVim recently.
Oh, yeah. We'll have to open that whole can of worms in a minute because I haven't used that at all. Okay, yeah. So scrolling up and down, we've talked about that. I didn't know about this thing that I just did. Set cursor line.
Yep.
So obviously that just shows you where you are.
Yeah. So if I had to like list the settings that I have to set up when I'm going to use Vim, it's relative number. There's cursor line. There's setting up the tabs correctly. So no expand tab. So it uses spaces instead of tabs. And then setting the tab stop to two.
Yeah, I think I have those too, the tab settings.
And this isn't a Vim setting, but something that I really can't function without is mapping caps lock to control.
Oh, I've heard of people doing that. I, for whatever reason, why do you do that?
Because it's so much easier to just hit control because my finger's already on it.
Oh, I see. You mean easier to hit caps lock?
Oh, yeah. Because I have to, you know, control U, control D, like all of these control characters. And I never use caps lock for anything.
Yeah, same here. So something that I mapped years ago is, you know how you can do GT and then G capital T to go forward and back one tab?
Mm-hmm.
I mapped that to control L and control H so I can get between tabs faster.
Oh, interesting. That is a really good, I need to do that one. That's actually great. I'm now realizing how much time I've spent typing GT.
Yeah, that one is great. And I'm just going through my VimRC here. There's some that I think like probably pretty much everybody does, like syntax enable, syntax
on. Right, yeah. I hope so.
Set HL search.
Yep.
So that makes it so when you search for anything, it will highlight it so you can actually see where it is.
And I mapped leader H to set no HL search. So after it highlights it, I can then turn it off because the highlighting really bothers me at a certain point.
Me too.
Yeah, so that makes it really easy to turn that off.
Yeah. I think this is just a native thing. I do colon NOH and that turns off highlighting.
Yeah, that's what I mapped leader H to.
Yeah. Oh, and getting into some real specific stuff, and this starts to touch on like plugins and stuff like that. First of all, I use Vundle for my plugins. Do you use that or something else?
I did until I switched to NeoVim, and now I am on Dein, D-E-I-N.
Okay.
It's NeoVim specific. So a big thing in NeoVim, and it's now supported in the latest version of Vim, I believe, is the asynchronous running of functions. And this plugin manager is about as dead simple of a plugin manager as you can get. And it enables asynchronous.
What's the value of that?
It's just faster.
Okay.
So one of the things you'll find is Vim startup time will get significantly slower over time as you add more plugins.
I haven't experienced that either.
I use a lot of plugins.
Yeah, like how many?
My old config at least had 30.
Okay. Let me look and see how many I have here.
I have to take a look at how many I currently have. But I just recently did a whole rebuilding of my Vim config.
Okay.
And I did a lot of profiling to see which plugins were slow and which ones weren't.
Got it. Okay, I just figured out how I can count these without actually... Cat VimRC, pipe... grep plugin pipe wc-l. I have 31 plugins.
Yeah.
So I wonder why. Well, I'll wait for you to tell me how many plugins you have.
Oh, geez. Let's see. 3, 4, 5. Right now. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I haven't experienced any kind of slowdown with these additions of plugins or anything.
Just have a magical machine.
I must.
Or you're just really tolerant of slowness.
Could be that I'm just like too numb to it to notice. Okay, so I use Vundle for my plugins. Here's some of the plugins that I use. There's one, and this gets into some Rails specific stuff. I use Tim Pope's Vim Rails plugin. Do you ever use that one, Trey?
I used to have that one, but I never ended up using anything from it.
Oh, really? I'm constantly using.
What do you use from that plugin?
Okay, so I'm going to have to like go into a file and actually use it to be able to say what I use. But okay, right now I'm in a model file called appointment. let's say I want to go to the controller for that appointment, for that model, I can do colon T controller and hit enter. And in this particular instance, it's giving me an error I've never seen in my life. Naturally.
Does it say error, you're on a podcast?
Exactly.
Live demo failure.
Right. Error, it actually matters, so it doesn't work. No, I do T controller, and it opens up the controller for that model in a new tab. That makes sense. And vice versa, I can do T model inside a controller, and it'll open the model file.
I think like I've over time done just so many different types of projects, like only like 15 to 30% of the projects that I open on a day-to-day basis are Rails. So I don't end up getting the muscle memory on those things. So I use Control P to find my files everywhere.
Yeah, Control P is great. I don't think I used that before like you told me about it. And now it's like insanity. Like how did I ever not use it? It's crazy.
That's how I navigate buffers, tabs a lot of times even, and files. And then on NeoVim, I use the CPSM plugin, which makes Control P even faster.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Control P is great. But back to the Vim Rails plugin, let's say I'm on a controller action and I do T view, colon T view, that'll open the view file for that controller. Mm. And almost anywhere you can do any of these. So like, again, in the view, I can do T controller or T model and go to the controller model.
I'm actually working on a project now that actually has Rails views, which I legit hasn't worked on a Rails project that had like Rails views and useful controllers in like 5 years. So I might have to look at adding this plugin back in.
Yeah, it's pretty handy. It has limitations. Like if you have models inside of namespaces, it no longer works, which is kind of annoying. But for like 90% of the time, it works. There's another one. So another Tim Pope one. And if you don't know, Tim Pope is like this guy who does Ruby stuff and he does Vim stuff. And he's like really like, I think he wrote a Vim book. So you'll come across
all of the plugins.
Right. So there's one called Endwise, and that's like, you know, if you open a block after you type do and hit enter, it'll stick an end in there for you.
Yeah, and actually it wasn't until I was rebuilding my Vim config that I realized that functionality was not native to Vim, and that made me a little angry.
Yeah, it kind of seems like it should be.
My comment in my Vim config for this one is Endwise. Literally just adds ends in Ruby, facepalm.
That's funny. Yeah, because like any IDE that has Ruby would like do that for you.
Yeah, I was fascinated by the fact that wasn't just built in.
Yeah, I don't get it, but I'm glad it's at least easy.
Yeah.
Another Ruby-specific plugin that I use is one from Thoughtbot called Vim RSpec. So if I'm inside of an RSpec file, I can do backslash S. And I also use tmux. So I'll have my test file on my left pane, and then in my right pane of tmux, it'll just kind of be empty as a place for running commands and stuff. And so I'll do backslash S in an RSpec file, and then on the right-hand side, it'll run RSpec file name colon whatever line of that file I was on when I hit backslash S. So it'll run just that spec.
Yep. I use Janko M's Vim test for that, which is more generic. It'll work on any language.
Oh, okay.
And then instead of sending it to a tmux pane, NeoVim has a built-in terminal. So it just runs it in the built-in terminal.
Oh, that's cool. And is the built-in terminal like, do you switch to it and switch back, or is it like a different part of the screen, or how does that work?
You can set it up either way. I normally just switch to it and switch back. Okay. By default, it'll just open it as another Vim tab.
Got it. Okay. Yeah, and just to round out that last thing, backslash S will run the current spec, backslash T will run the whole current file, backslash A will run the entire test suite. And that's a pretty fundamental part of my
And so when you're saying workflow. Backslash, that's your leader key, right?
That's the only time I use that particular leader key.
Okay, because the leader key is a whole nother debate amongst Vim users.
What's that debate?
What the right leader key is. And for those that don't know, is Vim, I feel like, just had so many things that they needed to have keys for that they couldn't just put them all in control. So there's this thing called a leader key, which is kind of like control, except it's just another key.
Okay.
I use backslash. It sounds like you use backslash also, but I know like Andrew, he uses comma.
Okay.
And that'll just completely destroy your using someone else's Vim.
Yeah. What other kind of stuff would you use your leader key? Because I literally only use it for that RSpec thing.
I have similar RSpec, so lower R and upper R are individual test, full test. I have leader T, which opens control P, leader H, which turns off syntax highlighting. What other leader keys do I have? Jeez, I don't even know.
Yeah, this is kind of interesting. I've never thought of mapping things to a leader key like that. What's the benefit of like mapping leader T to control P? Is that just more convenient than hitting the control key?
Actually, that's legacy, because the original plugin before control P existed and was better was mapped to leader T. I forget what it was called. Yeah, I don't remember the name of the plugin. It might have been called Leader T, and then they came out with Control P.
Okay, so that was just to bridge you over from the older one.
Yeah. I also have Leader TW, which is a mapping for a plugin that I use called Tabularize. Tabularize is really cool for those that are OCD. It'll align things. And so TW will align things on space.
Oh, wait a second. Can you talk more about that? What do you mean when you say it aligns things?
Let me pull up their.
Because that real quick. When you said if you're OCD,
yeah.
It's
so
like
aligning on hash rockets, for example. Aligning hashes on hash rockets. I use it for that all the time.
This one
is a little bit special. It's called Tabularize.
Tabularize.
I think, or it's just called Tabular.
Yeah, okay.
I think it's just Tabular, actually.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, Tabular.
Yeah, by Godly Geek.
Wow, this is going to change my life.
Yeah, it's really good.
Discovering these things is such a double-edged sword, because it's like, on one hand, I'm so glad I found this. On the other hand, I feel so dumb for wasting so much time in the past however many years.
Yeah, it's one of those things, like at the beginning, like there's just so many things to learn. You just pick and choose one by one, and like I'll never install more than one plugin at a time because I can't learn more than one plugin at a time.
Yeah.
Like once you install Tabular, now like your productivity is a little bit slower for the next few weeks while you build up the muscle memory and
right.
Ale is a plugin that I could not live without.
What's that?
That is it's a linter and an auto corrector.
Okay.
So you can set it up. So we'll talk about Ruby. You could set it up with RuboCop, both to show you where there's failures in RuboCop, but you can also set it up so that when you save, it corrects things that it can auto correct.
Got it.
So like whenever I go into a new project that has really ugly code, I just save a file and it'll auto-correct a whole bunch of stuff.
Got it. I can imagine that has not only upsides, because also like, I don't know, it sometimes is hard to go into a project and be like, hey, all this sucks and I fixed it for you. You're welcome.
I just did that this morning.
What's that one called again?
Ale.
Ale. Just A-L-E?
Yep. By Warp W0RP.
Okay. Yeah, if you just Google Vim Ale, apparently it comes right up.
Yeah. And I have all my Vim config, granted some of it's NeoVim specific. I have it all up on GitHub, which, you know, I can shoot that over to you and we can link it, cuz I have all of my linter and fixers configged in here.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll try to put my vimrc up in the show notes too.
It's even got like generic fixers like trim white space or remove trailing lines.
One other,
it's really good for OCD people too.
Yeah, all those things, they're important, or at least they're important to me. Like I hate it when I find trailing white space committed, because it's just like, why did you do this?
I wrote a function a long time ago called respace, which will change all the tabs to spaces, strip the white space at the end of the lines.
Yeah. Yeah, that stuff is just infuriating to see. Another plugin that I have that is pretty useful is Fugitive, another Tim Pope one.
Yep. That one makes you can't
it
live
so
without.
You can do colon G blame, and it will open up a gutter and show you like the commit hash for that line and who did it. And that way, when you come across a piece of terrible code and you just want to know who to be angry with, you can know right away.
Yeah. Let's see. There's only one other one that I use many, many times a day that I couldn't live without, and it's Vim Commentary, also by T Pope.
Okay, what's that?
It enables you to easily comment and uncomment code.
I use something for that. Wait, maybe I even have that. I don't think so though. How like what are the mechanics of it? How does that work?
If you can highlight some text and hit GC, and it'll comment it or uncomment it, depending on whether it's already commented, or on an individual line, you don't even have to highlight it. You can just hit GCC to toggle commenting.
Okay. Yeah, I use a different one. I use, oh, here's that leader again. It's /CI to toggle commenting for a block.
Yeah. So that one I use all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty useful. I use that too. But I don't comment a block of code and then commit it. That is a bad practice.
Yeah, you should just delete that code.
Right. Because, you know, I this is funny. I was teaching this class like a few weeks ago, and I was sharing some legacy code, like some intentionally bad code with my students, mm-hmm. and basically said, like, here, clean this up. And intentionally, I included some commented out code just to see what would happen. It was totally dead code, but people came across it, and it was so like, it was such a speed bump for people because they were like, hey, why is this code here? Like, is this needed? And I'm like, exactly.
Yep. Yeah, no, Andrew and I just take a hardline approach. If it's commented code, we just delete it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even ask the question if it's needed because it's not, it's commented.
Right, exactly.
and it's in Git.
Exactly.
If it's not version controlled, I could see the argument, but then just version control it.
Right. Exactly. Okay, so maybe we can talk now. I think that's pretty much all of my like plugins and stuff that other than like just syntax highlighting stuff. Any other plugins from your end, Trey?
No plugins, some customizations, but no plugins.
Are there any, any like notable customizations to mention?
Yeah, the one that most of them are just around like making plugins work better, but there's one that's really made things a lot better for me recently, and it's enabling a per project Vim config.
Mm, okay.
Which I can explain the use case for it, but there's just two commands, set exrc and set secure. And then it enables you to drop a .vimrc in any of your directories. And when you open Vim inside that directory, it'll run that config as well.
That seems great.
So the thing that I had is we have a Rails project that is entirely Dockerized. So even when I run the tests, I want to run them within Docker Compose. So what I can do is I put a vimrc in there that says the test command for Ruby is docker compose exec and then the rspec command. So now whenever I go into that project and I hit leader R, it runs the test just like if I was in another project that wasn't Dockerized.
That's pretty cool.
I've also seen, actually, I learned this from a coworker years and years ago. I just never got around to using it. But he used it to set up auto-completing usernames. So he would like put commit messages in with Git and pull request messages with Git, which is with Vim, I should say. So he would write the commit message and be able to auto-complete people's usernames.
Oh.
But he didn't want that on all of his projects.
How do you do that?
That I do not remember.
Okay.
But do you know Peter Jaros?
No.
Okay. He's big in the Ruby community, so I thought maybe you two have crossed paths before, but he was the one that always did that. I do not remember how exactly.
Okay.
Probably has his Vim config online.
Oh crap, I was gonna say something else. It was probably something about Vim, but I don't remember it, so we'll move on to the next thing. Are there any Vim commands or tricks or whatever that you use that don't seem like very commonly known?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it doesn't seem commonly known. I'm always astonished at how few people know about it. But macros,
mm-hmm.
They're like the single reason I moved to Vim and are still the most powerful thing in Vim.
What's an example of something you might use a macro for?
Anytime I need to do like complex bulk editing on a file. So a good example is you could actually convert a CSV into an array of Ruby hashes using a macro.
Mm-hmm.
So basically all a macro is you start recording on a button. So I normally just use Q. So you hit Q to start recording something. That you follow it with the letter that you want to have the macro on. So I normally just do QQ.
Yeah, the next thing you do after Q, that's like the name of the macro.
Yeah. Or
that's the way I think of it, at least.
Yep, exactly. And then you just do the actions that you want it to repeat. And really important thing here is if you're gonna do something on a bunch of lines, always end the recording at the start of the next line, right where you started on the previous line. So I always just normally like, caret to go to the beginning of the line, and then I start doing my macro, and then I always end at the beginning of the next line.
Oh, wait a second, Trey. You use caret to get to the beginning of a line?
Yes.
I don't. I use underscore. Did you know about that?
Underscore gets you to the beginning of a line?
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah.
Oh, neat.
Yeah. Have fun never using caret again.
That's so much better. This, by the way, is Vim. Anytime you talk about Vim, you learn like six new things that you never knew before.
Right. Man, I should have a whole podcast on Vim where every time I have a new guest, it would just change my life. 'Cause
you very easily could.
Yeah. Okay, so I interrupted you talking about macros. So you hit Q to like kick the whole thing off, and then you type any letter you want to have like a saved, like this is macro A or this is macro P or whatever, and then you just start recording your keystrokes, right?
Yeah. Okay, so here's an example of something. A lot of times you'll find like one of those JavaScript hashes that are all underscorized and all underscorized or something like that, and you want to snake case them. Like you can very easily create a macro to do that. So you would go through, you hit QQ to start recording on the Q, and then I would do something like slash double quote to get to the double quote, slash underscore to get to the underscore, X R or V shift U.
And then wait, F?
What?
Do you ever search using F?
I don't search using F.
What? Okay.
Wait, is that a thing?
Yeah. This is something I do
F
constantly.
F doesn't do anything on mine.
No. Okay, so it works a certain way. So like, let's say you're on a line and you want to get to the first single quote on that line. You would type F and then single quote.
Wow, that's... Okay, that will make my macros so much better.
And then let's say that you want to replace the entirety of what's inside those quotes. So I would do F single quote to get to that quote. Then I would use L to go one character over. And then I'd probably do like CF single quote. And that would delete everything up to and including the next single quote. And then you can type whatever.
You can also replace that F with an I. And then you'll be able to be anywhere inside of those quotes. I is inside.
Wait.
Replace any characters, that Vim knows how to match, like parentheses or quotes, if you're inside of those, you can say C to change, I for inside, and then the character.
Whoa, okay, hang on. So I could do like CI quote. Oh, man.
And then you don't even have to be at the beginning.
That is great. Yeah, because I was only doing CF because I didn't know about CI.
I use CIW all the time, just change inside the word. So it just changes the current word that's highlighted or that your character's on.
Hang on a second. Okay. CIW. Oh. Yeah, then, this whole time I was doing like B and then CW.
Yeah, and then A is the alternative to I. So if you want to replace something inside of quotes but also remove the quotes, do A for around. And it'll include the character that you put in.
Oh, let me try this. C-A-W. Oh, no, not C-A-W. C-A quote. Oh, wow. That is amazing.
Yeah, okay. That one I use all the time.
I'm going to take a note of this right now. So, like, C-I. Okay, there we go.
We could amazing. Do, like a weekly, like, Vim Tuesday where we just go through Vim configs.
Right? Man, that's so great. Yeah, and just to round out the F thing, you do like F and then a character to go to the first instance, or you can do capital F and then the character to go to the previous instance.
Line. Yeah, so I would just do that, and then I'd go to the next line right where I started the cursor on the first line, hit Q again, and then you just hit at Q to repeat it. Normally, my process is I have to do it manually once to record it. I hit at Q once to make sure it works. And then I use the relative number, see how many lines down I need to go. And I say something like 32 at Q.
Exactly.
And then you go grab a cup of coffee because sometimes it takes a little bit, but your computer's just typing code all by itself.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll do that like if I have a bunch of words that I copied and pasted somewhere that I want to be like inside an array or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Although, when is that ever a good use case? I don't know. Because then you would just do like %W or something like that.
Yeah, that's the thing with macros is it's hard to think of the use case, but when you see it, it's magical.
Yeah. Yeah. It totally is. Like, I mean, this is, even though it's a bad example, if you have like a list of 10 words and you want to surround each of those 10 words with single quotes and then add a comma at the end of each line, that's super easy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. A couple other common things I do, and this is, we probably can just mention like a few more tips and have to be done because we're almost out of time, but let's say I'm in any Ruby file that has methods, I'll do brackets, left bracket and right bracket. That'll jump. It's not just methods, I guess. It'll jump among white space.
Yep.
And then what about braces? Do braces do anything? Oh, wait, that is brace. I'm not doing brackets. I'm doing braces. Brackets themselves, it does something, but I can't tell what it is that it's doing.
Oh, here's something else that I just recently added that has been really useful for me is I mapped Shift K, so it'll do a global search using the built-in grep that I then use Silver Searcher to back for the word underneath my cursor.
Wait a second. I'm not even at your level with some of this stuff. What's the built-in grep thing with K?
So Vim has grep built-in, which will search your whole working directory or however it's configured. You can config what list of files it searches. for the text that you search for. Then you can also change the grep command. So I've changed both of those. I changed the grep command to use this tool called Silver Searcher, which is a lot faster.
As you were talking, I just hit Command K, and it took me to like this alternate universe where everything is horrible.
I don't know. I use Shift K, which I mapped. So I changed the grep program to use Silver Searcher. Mm-hmm. And then that by default uses my git ignore list. So I'm not searching, you know, vendor gems and all that nonsense.
Okay.
And then I mapped Shift K to basically grab the word underneath my cursor and then search for it across the whole project.
Oh, that's great. So is like Silver Searcher a good starting point for getting all that stuff going?
Yeah. And that my whole config is in the, in my Vim config too. So I have it pretty well structured. So there's actually just a file called grep.vim that shows you how to config all that stuff.
Oh, nice. And I'll just mention a couple of my like commonly used things. One that I use a lot is Shift V. This is probably a pretty commonly known one, but if anybody's more at the beginner level, I'll do like Shift V, which will select a block of text, and then I'll do equals, which will usually indent that how I want. It doesn't always do a perfect job, but
yes,
yeah, that one is pretty good.
For a single line, you can actually do double equals.
Double equals.
Yep. Just equals equals on a line.
Do you have to shift V that line first?
Nope.
Okay, so I'm going to misindent a line and hit equals equals. Oh, wow.
That's the advantage of equals equals is you don't have to highlight it.
That's pretty cool.
And you can also use equals with movements. So like if you go to the top of the file with GG, you can hit equals shift G to auto indent all the way down.
Wait, equals like shift G.
Equals 10J will auto indent 10 lines down. Again, I use my relative numbering.
Yeah, yeah.
Equals shift 10J. V was replaced heavily for me with relative numbering.
Wow, that equals 10J thing. That's pretty cool. I probably won't use shift anymore. Shift
what V. I found myself doing a lot was shift V and then scrolling, and then doing something on it when... With relative numbering, you can pretty much do all of those things with movements.
Yeah. Yeah. Man. Okay, well, I'm pumped about my next... I'm pumped about the rest of my life of editing code with Vim, because these things will obviously continue to be beneficial forever. Okay, so maybe let's... I'm just going to try to like name a few of my like highlight takeaways from what you've told me. So the CI and then the character, whether it's parentheses or a quote or whatever, that will blow away the contents of whatever character I give it and put me in insert mode so I can replace the contents. That is going to be great. The relative number thing, how do you set the relative thing again? What's that even called?
It's just colon set space RNU will do it.
Okay.
Or relative number if you want the whole thing.
Got it. Yeah, those are probably the two biggest takeaways. And the equals equals thing, which will format one line.
Those are literally my first two lines in my Vim config.
Oh, wow.
After all the plugin stuff, those are the first things I set.
And then the relative equals for formatting. I think those are my biggest takeaways. And then I think maybe my takeaways to you are maybe not as profound, but one that I'm proud to have bestowed on you is the underscore instead of caret to get to the beginning.
The F
of
and the
line.
Underscore are the big things for me.
Yeah, I really think you're going to like F.
Yeah, that's great. And it doesn't highlight it, which is actually the thing I like most about it.
Yeah. All right. Well, anything else to add, Trey, before we hop off?
No, I don't think so. We'll put a link in there to my Vim config. Feel free to hit me up if anyone has any questions or trouble setting it up or anything like that. And I'm always happy to talk about Vim stuff.
Awesome. Well, Trey, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.